This tape is produced and distributed by the Christian Biblical Church of God, Post Office Box 1442, Hollister, California, 95024-1442, for the Canadian office and offices overseas. Listen at the end of the tape, please. This is number 11 in the series of the prophecies of Jesus in the Old Testament. And this will probably be the last tape that we will do on the series. Let's go to the Book of Daniel, chapter 9. And the 70 weeks prophecy has been one of the most difficult for those to understand. And I might say that since I have used for a good portion of this series the book by Arnold Fruchtenbaum, The Messianic Christology, I would have to say that he does not have the dates accurate or correct. And he sums it up by saying that the Messiah had to have been crucified before 70 AD. Well, that gives an awful lot of sliding time. And as we will see, the prophecies that were given to Daniel are far more accurate than that. We will see that there are three segments to the 70-week prophecy. Now, let's begin in Daniel, the ninth chapter, and let's begin. What we'll do is just read it through first. Let's begin right here in verse 23, Daniel 9 and verse 23. At the beginning of your supplications, the commandment came forth, and I am come to show you. In other words, God said to Gabriel, go. And I think it's very interesting when you go through all of the prophecies having to do directly with Jesus Christ. Gabriel is the one who apparently is in charge of that. Who was it that spoke to Zechariah, John the Baptist's father? Gabriel. Who was it that spoke to Mary? Gabriel. Who is it that is speaking to Daniel? Gabriel. To bring the prophecies of the coming of Christ. And what we are going to see is this, is that. This talks about his first coming and his second coming. And we are going to learn that part of our understanding in the past was not correct. And even what I wrote in the Harmony of the Gospels was not correct because we did not understand it the way that it should have been understood. So let's continue on here. And I am come to show you, for you are greatly beloved, therefore understand the matter and consider the vision. And of course, he never did understand it. But anyway, verse 24, 70 weeks are determined upon your people and your holy city. Write that down as one. Number two, to finish the transgressions and make an end of sins. Number three, make reconciliation for iniquity. Number four, to bring in everlasting righteousness. Number five, to seal up the vision and the prophecy. Number six, to anoint the most holy. Now, I suppose you could even break those down into seven if you wanted to, if you wanted to split the one concerning the people and the city. Okay. Verse 25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. And the street shall be built again, and the wall even in troublous times. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood. Unto the end of the war desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and oblations to cease. And for an overspreading of abomination, he shall make it desolate even to the consummation, and that determined shall be poured out upon the desolate. Now then, let's go back and let's look at this printout that we have, the three prophetic periods of Daniel's 70-week prophecy in Daniel 9. The first period is the first 7 years. Okay? Now we'll see that this begins shortly after that Nebuchadnezzar is struck mad, which is 567 BC. And we find the whole account concerning Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel 4, verses 29 through 33. And Carl has made this notation here. Daniel and the sister of Ahasuerus governed Babylon during this period. God takes advantage of Nebuchadnezzar's period of madness to fulfill his prophecies. God had apparently meant that Nebuchadnezzar fulfilled them, but in his vanity he had to be struck mad for 7 years. Okay, here's where the command goes out to rebuild. Let's go to Nehemiah, the first chapter. Nehemiah, the first chapter. Now, most of the chronologies have Nehemiah coming into Jerusalem at a later date, and this is incorrect. He is really quite early. He's actually there before the time that Ezra comes. Now let's pick it up, Nehemiah, the first chapter. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, and it came to pass in the month of Chislu, in the 20th year, I was in Shushan, the palace. Now, Shushan is in Persia. Then Hananiah, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped and which were left of the captivity and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach, and the wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gate thereof is burned with fire. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven, and said, I beseech you, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God, that keeps covenant and mercy for those that love him and observe his commandments. Let your ear now be attentive and your eyes open, that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray unto you now, day and night, for the children of Israel, your servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Both I and my father's house have sinned. And I think it's very interesting. This is very similar to what Daniel did at the beginning part of Daniel, the ninth chapter, when he confessed all the sins of Israel. He goes on showing we have dealt very corruptly and so forth all the way down there. Now let's come here to chapter 2. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes king, that wine was before him, and I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said to me, why is your countenance sad, seeing you are not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was sore afraid, and said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city and the place of my father's sepulcher lies waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, for what do you make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, if it please the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you would send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulcher, that I may build it. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall your journey be, and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. And so then, moreover, I said to the king, if it pleased the king, let letters be given to me to the governors beyond the river. This is the decree then, that they may convey me over till I come to Judah, and the letter of Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace, which are, pertains to the house, and for the wall of the city, for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. And then it says, then it gives the rest of the journey and so forth and how he got there. Okay. That is the decree for the beginning of the building of Jerusalem. And that took 49 years. First 7 weeks. Now we find that in the bold print on the printout here on page 1. The beginning of the first 7 weeks of the 70, which then is minus 7 times 7 equals 49 years. So this took place from 654, or 564 rather, to 515 BC. In that year, he was made governor of Judea. Now let's come down here to Nehemiah 5. Nehemiah 5 and verse 14, which shows that he was governor for 12 years. Nehemiah 5 and verse 14. Moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year even to the 2nd and 30th year of Artaxerxes the king, that is 12 years, I and my brethren have not eaten the bread of the governor, which means that he provided his own, not being charged to the governor or the king. So while he was set there to be their governor, that is the governor of the Jews, he was there for 12 years. Now, let's go to page 2. Page 2. There is a gap in the Hebrew between the first 7 weeks and the following 62 weeks of the 70-week prophecy. Let's go back to Daniel 9 and see that. Back to Daniel 9 and we'll see that. Okay. Back to Daniel 9, verse 25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem, now that's what we saw there in Nehemiah, unto Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. There's a split right there. The seven is separated off by itself, and it says in the next part of the sentence, the street shall be built again and the wall even in perilous times. So that is the 49 years in which Jerusalem was being rebuilt. Now then, verse 26 starts something else out different, and it picks it up with 62 weeks, and after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. Now this is when Christ was crucified. Christ was crucified on the Passover day in 30 AD. Now, the way you find out when the 62 weeks begins, because there are three different periods here, is that you count back from when he was cut off, because that tells you the end of the matter. See, it doesn't tell us when the 62 weeks begin, but it tells us when it ends. Now that's similar to what we have done with some of the prophecies in the book of Revelation and how these things take, when they take place. So the end of the segment concerning the 62 weeks is when the Messiah is cut off and not for himself. You can put in your notes there Isaiah 53. We've already covered this. How that he was cut off not for himself, but for the sins of the people. So likewise here, he shall be cut off, and that means crucified, and not for what he has done. So the way you find out when the second period begins, now let's go to page 3. Page 3. Carl adds in here some of the things that were profound at that time. Malachi prophesies 410 to 409. Malachi is written during the priesthood of the wicked Jonathan, son of Joiada, or Judas, the brother of Jesus. That's not Christ, but that is Jesus, who was murdered in the temple, and Messiah, Josephus, gives a reference there. Josephus deliberately confuses this Messiah with a later Messiah, thus throwing off the dating of the prophecies of Malachi. And then he lists the Persian kings that were there. The beginning of the 62 of the 70 weeks prophecy is 405 to 404 BC. That's when it begins. And you go 69 weeks or 434 years, and that takes you down to 30 AD. Now, the way that you do this is that you see how these how you come to that point and you count back. Since you don't know exactly when the 62 weeks begin, and that's why Daniel could not understand it, what you have to do is wait for the completing of the event, and then you count backwards to see where it began. Just like we did when we were trying to understand some of the prophecies in the book of Revelation to try and put those together. What we did, we saw the conclusion of the matter and counted back, and that way it gave us a perspective as to when these things could be. Remember we did that with the cutting off of the sacrifices and counted back. If you remember the chart on the two tapes on Revelation, so that's what Carl did here. Now, continuing on page 3, picking up once again with Daniel 9, verses 25 and 26 refer to this prince as a special prince, the anointed one, the Messiah, because we're talking about two different ones here. That's what becomes important. The Messiah, the prince. Now notice those words are capitalized when you read it there in the scriptures. The latter part of verse 26 refers to a prince to come after Christ. He is not said to be the anointed one, but merely one of the princes of the world. Let's read that. And threescore and 2 weeks, the street shall be built. And after the threescore and 2 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, and the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood, and the end of the war, desolations are determined. Now then, what happens is that when you come to the end of the 62 weeks, there is a break in the Hebrew, even in the way it's written, and there's a special, what is called an atna, which is kind of like an upside-down V, which means stop at this point because the subject discontinues. And what comes after that is another subject, which is the prince of the people. Then he sent me the Hebrew one there. And we already read that after 62 weeks he'll be cut off. The destruction of Jerusalem and the temple, and the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood unto the end of the war, desolations are determined, Daniel 9:26. Then there is another major break, this time designated in the Hebrew like as it were with a colon. And he says, showing, I believe, a prophetic leap to the last week or the last 7 years of the 70 weeks. In Hebrew, this pause simply looks like our colon. Now, the last period then, verse 27, he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. Now, that is at the time of the end. Now, let's look at some scriptures here at that prince. Let's come back to Daniel, the 8th chapter. Daniel 8, verse 23. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper and practice and destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy also, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. He shall magnify himself in his heart. And we covered this last week with the mark of the beast. So you can listen to that one to get some of the other things that go with this. And by peace shall destroy many, and he shall also stand up against the prince of princes, and he shall be destroyed, be broken without hand. Now that means taken care of by the power of God, not some human being. Now let's look at another section of this in Daniel, the 11th chapter. Daniel 11. Where it talks about the covenant that would be made. Daniel 11. Let's begin in verse 22. And the arms of a flood, with the arms of a flood shall they be overthrown from before him and shall be broken. Now this is the flood that is talking about referring to armies. Yea, also the prince of the covenant. This is the prince which is referred to, the prince of the people. He shall confirm the covenant with many 1 week, meaning 7 years. So we find it talked of here. And verse 23 of Daniel 11 now. And after the league was made with him, he shall work deceitfully, and he shall come up and shall become strong with a small people. He shall enter peaceably into the fattest province, fattest places of the province, that is coming into the land of Israel. And he shall do that which his father has not done, nor his father's father. And he shall scatter them among the prey and spoil and riches. And he shall forecast his devices against the strongholds even for a time. And then that prophecy applies here to when he makes the covenant. Now that's why when we go through what is the end time, we say the end time is 7 years. 3.5 years of peace and prosperity, because he makes the covenant for 1 week. Then in the midst of that week, he causes the sacrifice and oblation to cease. Daniel, the 12th chapter. And so if you need the tapes, get the two tapes on the outline of Revelation. And when we count back that 1,290 days, we come to the 10th of Nisan. And the 10th of Nisan is when the Jews would select their Passover lambs to be slain at the temple. So he cuts the sacrifices off at that point. Then he receives the deadly wound that is healed. Then, the second part of the 1 week will take place. Now, let's read it here. In the midst of the week, now back to Daniel 9 and verse 27. Daniel 9 and verse 27. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and oblations to cease. Now, this is not referring to Christ as we used to believe. Because when Christ died, the sacrifice and offerings continued for another 40 years. The only one who caused the sacrifice and oblations to cease are in the persons of two people. One, Antiochus Epiphanes, and two, the one at the end time. That he's going to go, as we saw in 2 Thessalonians, and sit in the temple of God and say he's God. And for the overflowing of abominations shall he make it desolate. This is the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. Now hold your place here and go to Matthew 24. And we will see that in the midst of the week, when he does this, this is the beginning of the tribulation. Now, Matthew 24, and let's pick it up in verse 14. Matthew 24 and verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, then shall the end come. So there's yet going to be a tremendous preaching of the gospel in the whole world. Exactly how God is going to do that, we don't know yet, but when God opens the door, hopefully we can become part of that, if that's what God desires. Verse 15. When therefore you shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place. That's what it's talking about here. The overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate. That is the temple. He goes into the temple which is yet to be built. He says he is God, and any man claiming he is God in the temple of God has got to be the worst abomination ever. Now notice what happens. He says, whoso reads, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let them which be on the housetop come not down to take anything out of the house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. Boy, I tell you, this is urgent time, isn't it? It's talking to those in Judea. Woe to them that are with child and give suck in those days. Pray that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation. When shall the great tribulation be? When the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel, the prophet, stands in the holy place, then shall the great tribulation start. So not until then. And then that fulfills the rest of this prophecy in Daniel 9, and hence it covers the first coming of Christ down through the 62 weeks and the second coming of Christ, but you have a space in between. You have a space of 111 years between the ending of the first 7 weeks, then you have, and the beginning of the 62 weeks. Then at the end of the 62 weeks when Christ is crucified and dies, then you have from that time until the last 7 years at the end, you have a gap. So there again shows and demonstrates how line upon line, here a little, there a little, and put it all together. Now I know that I went through this a little quickly, but we have so many other tapes which cover that time period in those prophecies that if you ask for those and go back and get those and go through them again, that will help you understand the rest of the prophecy here in Daniel 9. So these are the three prophetic periods of Daniel's 70-week prophecy, Daniel 9. And I think this is the most accurate we can understand at this point. At least two of them are clearly determined. The first 7 weeks of the 49 years of building Jerusalem, that's clearly determined. And the ending of the 62 weeks when the Messiah would be cut off and not for himself, having to be the crucifixion of Christ. We know the end will be when the beast is cut off without hand and thrown into the lake of fire. But we don't know exactly when the last 7 years will start, except we're given a clue that he will confirm the covenant with many. So when that covenant is made, then he begins to deal deceitfully and will come down into the Holy Land. So we'll have to watch for that as we come down the line with the things concerning the end time events. Now I want to cover something here, the rest of it, which will be what I will call the covenant of covenants. Now we know that God is a covenant God. Anything that he does is done by covenant. And let's look at some things which indicate that between the two Elohim, the one who became the Father and the one who became the Son, that there were at least things written down and oaths affirmed to, which then we can say constitutes a covenant between the one who became the Father and the one who became the Son. Now let's see this. Let's begin back here in Psalm 110. And this is really a tremendous psalm because it reveals that there are two Elohim. And in this case, two Jehovahs. Well, that's why we have the booklets, two Jehovahs of the Psalm, two Jehovahs of the Pentateuch. Okay. Now let's begin in verse 1. Begin in verse 1. The Lord said unto my Lord. Now question, who was the Lord of David? The one who became Christ, the God of the Old Testament. But it says, the Lord says unto my Lord, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool. Now hold your place here because we will come back. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 15. 1 Corinthians 15. And here's how the New Testament interprets that section. Let's begin in verse 20. Now is Christ risen from the dead and become the first fruits of them that sleep. For since by man came death, by man came also the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam all die, even so in Christ shall all be made alive. But every man in his own order, Christ the first fruits, afterwards they that are Christ at his coming. Then comes the end, when he shall have delivered up the kingdom to God, even the Father, when he shall have put down all rule and all authority and power, for he must reign till he has put all enemies under his feet. We know that's not fulfilled yet. The last enemy that shall be destroyed is death. And when he puts all things under his feet, but when he says all things are put under him, it's manifest that he, the one who gave the order, is exempt, which did put all things under him. Now then, let's come back here to Psalm 110. So this has to reveal the Father, the one of Elohim who became the Father, the Lord, said unto my Lord, the one of Elohim who became the Son, sit at my right hand, that's after his resurrection, till I make your enemies your footstool. Now let's come down to verse 4. The Lord has sworn and will not repent, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Now when God swears, that is an oath, that is an affirmation, that becomes a covenant. Remember what we went through with Abraham. Genesis 22, where the Lord swore by himself. Now here he is appointing the one who was Christ to become high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Now, since we're going to cover that shortly in a series concerning the book of Hebrews, we won't turn there at the present time to look at that one. Now let's look at one more psalm. Let's come to Psalm 16. Now here is another part of the covenant. In other words, let's look at it this way. Since every prophecy concerning Christ was written down and fulfilled, were not those writings part of the covenant that was given to Israel? Yes. And then also through the prophets, and then part of the covenant, the fulfillment was in the New Testament. Now let's look at this one and see how this applies. Let's begin right here in verse 7. I will bless the Lord who has given me counsel. My rain shall instruct me in the night seasons. I have set the Lord always before me, which Christ did, didn't he? Always. Because he is at my right hand, I will not be moved. Therefore, my heart is glad, and my glory rejoices. My flesh also shall rest in hope. For you will not leave my soul in hell, neither will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. Now let's go to Acts, the second chapter, and see we're on the very first preaching of the Apostle Peter. He showed that was fulfilled. But notice while we're turning back there, it is that he promised Christ that he would not leave his soul in the grave, that he would not see corruption. Acts, the second chapter. And then Peter makes this very clear that this has nothing to do with King David, but it has to do with Christ. Acts 2. And let's begin here in verse 25. Acts 2 and verse 25. For David speaks concerning him, I foresaw the Lord always before my face. He is on my right hand that I should not be moved. Therefore did my heart rejoice and my tongue was glad. Moreover, my flesh shall rest in hope, because you will not leave my soul in hell, neither will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. You have made me to know the ways of life. You shall make me full of joy with your countenance. Now, quote is finished. Verse 29. Men and brethren, let me speak freely unto you of the patriarch David, that he's both dead and buried, and his sepulcher is with us. So then he goes on to show that this had to do with Christ being resurrected from the dead. But you see, here's a promise that is made. Now let's look at something else, which is really, I think, highly important. Let's go to Hebrews, the 10th chapter. And then we'll go back to the book of Psalms from there. Hebrews 10. Hebrews 10. Then we'll see some other things which indicate a covenant, an agreement between the one who became the Father and the one who became the Son. Okay, Hebrews 10, and let's pick it up in verse 5. Hebrews 10 and verse 5. Wherefore, when he comes into the world, he says, sacrifice and offering you would not, or that is, you desired not, but a body have you prepared me. Now, this is very interesting, because when we come back to Psalm 40, where this is quoted from, the phrase, but a body you have prepared me, is not in this translation in the King James, but a body you have prepared me is in the Septuagint. I have a Septuagint, and I checked it out. And Paul here is using the Septuagint in quoting it because there is a significance to the point of having a body prepared. One is physical body, and number two, the church, the body of Christ, which then is a spiritual body. Now notice verse 6. In burnt offerings and sacrifice for sin you have no pleasure. Then said I, lo, I come. In a volume of a book it is written of me to do your will, O God. Now let's go back to Psalm 40 and we'll read that. And we will see that Hebrews 10 here is a quote of a quote that's written in a volume of a book or a scroll. Come back to Psalm 40. Psalm 40 in verse, let's pick it up here in verse 6. Psalm 40 in verse 6. Sacrifice and offering you desire not. That's what we saw quoted back there in Hebrews, the 10th chapter. My ears you have opened. Burnt offering and sin offerings you have not required. Then said I, lo, I come. In the volume of a book it is written of me, I desire to do your will, O my God, yea, your law is within my heart. Question, where is the volume of that book? You don't find it in any other book of the Bible. You only find it in those two places, one in Psalm 40, and the other one in Hebrews 10. Let's ask another question. Is there a book of life before God in heaven above? The answer is yes, there's a book of life. Are our names written in the book of life, being in the new covenant? Yes, it is. Question, could there be a book or a scroll in which all of these things were written down between the one who became the Father and the one who became the Son? Not that they needed to have it written down for their sake, because their word is true all the time, but written down so that those who are resurrected will be able to see that, yes, it was written down at thus and such a point in time in the plan of God. Otherwise, we would find this volume of the book contained in some other book of the Bible, don't you suppose? So I know that some people may take me to task on that, but I'm just posing a question. Now we're going to see that there are several other things that indicate that there were quite a few things written down. Question is, could this be the New Testament, and that's the book it's referring to? In both cases, it's referring to a scroll. So I don't know if it would refer to the New Testament. That's entirely possible. That's entirely possible. But it says it's written in a scroll of a book. Apparently, if it is an accurate statement, not only just a prophecy, but also something that was written at a time in the past, that it's written in a scroll, and could that be at God's throne? That's the question that I'm asking here, and looking at all of the things which indicate that that is probably so. Now, let's come to... Let's come to the second psalm. Second psalm. Psalm 2. Let's begin in verse 1. Why do the heathen rage, and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. Now, again, we're talking about two, aren't we? And we will see that Christ was the anointed. Let us break their bands asunder. Let us cast their cords from us. Now, I believe this is a prophecy of the coming great apostasy, the occult apostasy that is now sweeping the world, cutting everything off from God. He that sits in the heavens shall laugh, the Lord shall have them in derision. Then he shall speak unto them in his wrath and vex them with his sore displeasure. Yet I have set my king upon my holy hill in Zion. I will declare the decree. Now, what is the decree? Where is the decree? The Lord has said to me, you are my son, this day I have begotten you. Now, when was it that Jesus was begotten?